My first question to you is, why do you think that after 65 years, the Amelia Earhart mystery is still so compelling for people?
I was asked by a magazine a while ago what the importance of the project was, and I said there is no redeeming social importance to this project whatsoever, but it's just something that fascinates people. And the magazine went on to write, it's like a good mystery that you can't put down. And I think that that's basically it. It's a mystery, it's unsolved, and people are intrigued by mysteries. Now, for somebody who's looked at it in detail, like me now, it becomes a very complex mystery and a very complex sort of intellectual challenge to solve it. But I think the general compellingness of it is just that it is an unsolved mystery.
Was it the mystery that brought you into this, or what? How exactly did you get involved with this project?
Oh, it was really serendipity, as has been a lot to do with this project. I was working for a small federal agency in Washington, D.C., the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and the people who formed TIGER, the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, Rick Gillespie and Pat Thrasher, came in to see us about standards for the preservation of historic aircraft. How they might encourage better preservation of historic aircraft. My boss at the time was a Marine Corps fighter pilot from World War II. He and I got fascinated. We both joined the organization and talked to them over the intervening years. In 1988, I was leaving government, and Rick called up and said, well, you know, we've avoided the Earhart mystery all these years, but we finally decided we got a new theory here that we want to pursue, and we think we're going to look into it. It involves an island in the South Pacific. I said, well, I'm leaving my job. I've done work in the South Pacific. I've done archaeology there. You need an archaeologist? Here I am. And so they needed an archaeologist, and here I am, 15 years later.
Still working on it.
Still working on it.
Well, could you give us a little bit of background on Amelia Earhart? What was it that she was trying to do? What was the situation at the time?
Well, Amelia Earhart was certainly America's and probably the world's most well-known female pilot at the time. Certainly a pioneer of aviation, also a pioneer in women's rights and promoting the equality of women, encouraging young women to do anything that men could do. Quite a remarkable woman. And she had set a number of air records at that time, distance flying records and altitude records and speed records and so on. And she was involved in attempting to fly around the world at the equator, which was something nobody had done.
Was she the first woman to fly across the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah, the first time she did it, it was sort of hoped up. She was basically a passenger, and then that never satisfied her. So a few years later, she did it legitimately on her own, solo, flew it herself, and it's the plane she did then that's in the Smithsonian Institution now.
So tell us about this trip in 1937. How did that go?
Well, the idea was that they were going to leave from Oakland, California. They started out, the first attempt was to go west, and they flew from Oakland to Hawaii, started to take off from Hawaii, and had an accident, did what's called ground looped. Belt loop, landing gear collapsed, plane spun around, landed on its belly, a lot of damage, and it had to be brought back to Burbank, California for repairs. The next attempt was to fly east, and so they took off from Oakland, and the idea was to go across the United States, across the Atlantic, on around as close to the equator as possible, with the goal of getting back to the United States on July 4th. They were a little bit behind schedule by the time they reached Ley, New Guinea, which was where they had to jump off to go the 2,500 miles or so to Howland Island in the middle of the Pacific, and that's where they lost it.
I see. Well, that was a 2,500-mile leg. Why was it, you think, that she was not able to find Howland Island? What was the problem, do you think?
Well, remember that we're in 1937 here. We don't have satellites. We don't have all the navigational aids that we have now. What they had, basically, was celestial navigation, sextants, octants, shooting the suns, shooting the stars, and so on. dead reckoning, basically just sort of figuring out, given your airspeed and your ground speed, how far you had gone over the ground on a particular course, and radio direction finding. Fred Noonan, her navigator, and remember she was not alone here. She had Noonan, who was a superb navigator. Noonan had pioneered the routes for the Pan American Clippers across the Pacific, and the Clippers used radio navigation extensively. The idea was that you use celestial navigation to get yourself close to your target, and then radio direction finding to home in on the target and get there and land. Howland Island is a tiny little speck of coral. It's less than a mile across. And so it was a very, very small target for Noonan to hit using celestial navigation. Radio navigation was absolutely critical. And here's where things really screwed up, because neither Earhart nor Noonan were skilled in Morse code. They intended to use voice transmission for basically all their communication. The trouble with that is that it was at the time a whole lot more difficult to pick up on voice transmission. You had less range with voice transmission, and so it wasn't as good for radio direction finding. Plus, it appears that there were a number of other problems which it would take a long time to go into, but suffice to say that the Coast Guard cutter Itasca, which was lying off Howland Island to guide them in, never could establish two-way radio communication with the airplane. And neither the airplane nor the Itasca could get a fix on each other. Therefore, they couldn't find the island.
Currently, we have two main hypotheses about how Amelia met her end. One, that she crash-landed in the water and drowned, and the plane therefore would be at the bottom of the ocean. The other is that she landed on or close to an abandoned island. Why do we have these two hypotheses? What's the rationale behind these two modes of thought?
Well, back in 1937, when she disappeared and the Navy did the initial search, there were a number of radio messages received after she disappeared and after she would have run out of gas that purported to be from Earhart. And the Navy at first took these entirely seriously, and those messages suggested that she was somewhere in the Phoenix Islands group. They sent out a search party, sent out the battleship Colorado to look in the Phoenix Islands. They didn't find her. And at that point, they concluded that the radio messages had been hoaxes, and therefore, she must have gone into the ocean and gone to the bottom. That became the official U.S. government position, that she had crashed and sunk. Over the years, many people haven't been really satisfied with that, and there have been all manner of other hypotheses, captured by the Japanese, taken by aliens, alive and living in New Jersey, all kinds of things.
I was referring to tenable hypotheses.
Well, okay, who knows what's tenable. But right now, quite recently, in 1999, probably the preeminent adherence to the crashed and sank, what we call the crashed and sank school, Elgin and Marie Long, published a book called Amelia Earhart, Mystery Solved. And they think that they can plot quite exactly where she went into the water. And so that has provided the basis for a sort of new surge in interest in the crashed and sank school, and that's why you have a number of people investing the money to go out and search the ocean bottom at that point. Our hypothesis at Tiger is that that's not what happened, that in fact she did wind up in the Phoenix Islands, that some of the radio messages probably were genuine. And there are a variety of reasons that we think that happened, and this is all laid out in a book that several of us have written called Amelia Earhart's Shoes. Is the mystery solved? Because we don't claim that the mystery is solved. We think that we're on the road to solving it. And that's published by Altamira Press last year, 2001. So we think that, in fact, she wound up on the Komororo, and she and Noonan landed there, were able to get off the radio messages, and then died.